Welcome, everybody. Sorry, I got caught up in the traffic attending to a domestic matter. Now, welcome in particular to the South African Tobacco Transformation Alliance and also, of course, the Black Tobacco Farmers Association. We are two among four, possibly five, I don't know, in Nkululeko. Now, finally, have we got two or three other submissions or merely one that are written but no formal request for oral presentation?
We had three submissions, Chairperson. The two are going to present today. Then there is British American Tobacco South Africa, who did not want to present. But
okay, so basically I misunderstood because I think I read your same message twice. I thought there was yet another one. Good, welcome everybody. Apologies in Nkululeko, sorry. Right.
We have no apologies, Chairperson. Thank you.
Good. Okay, let's get going. Welcome. Are the members here from the Tobacco Transformation Alliance? Sata, are you here? Please go for it. You've got 15 minutes. Welcome, everybody, in particular our civil society stakeholders.
I just spoke to them about 2 minutes ago, Chairperson. They were joining. I hope.
All right. Are the next representatives here from BGA, BGFA? Are they here? Excuse me. If you hear from the Black Farmers, then can you please go ahead? Thank you.
Let me try them on the phone once again, Chairperson.
Sorry?
Let me try them on the phone once again.
Yeah, this is not acceptable, really. Fine. Is there anything that anybody wants to say in the meanwhile? Mr. Wright always has something to say. So, do you want to say something in anticipation, not knowing what exactly the people are going to represent on their behalf, except that you know a written text has been submitted to us, which we all have to look at. It was sent out to you yesterday. Any comments on the bill? We've already considered the bill, the overall issues. Instead of waiting, maybe use this time productively. Mr. Ryder, Mr. Fani Dutoy, Mr. Moletsane. Any comments?
No comment at this stage. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Yeah, likewise. Nothing to say at this stage, Chair. Oh, nothing to say, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. So what do we do?
Fani said he's going to lead us in a sing-along, Chair.
Well, you can sing international, and that's fine. I mean, you can do it in Afrikaans. Hello? Yes, in Nkululeko. Sorry, just 1 second. Let me.
See, you're very strong today, Honorable Ryder.
Firstly, can you start with singing the international, please, in Afrikaans? Well, then you can't speak then. Sorry. The rules are clear.
Is that the new coalition speaking, Chair?
Oh dear, the new coalition of the ANC with the SACP, both of us lost.
No marriage.
Okay. Mr. Moletsane, who asked you to speak? I mean, how long have you been in Parliament now? 2 years, another EFF meeting, my brother. Yeah, you must put your hand up. And you know me, I'm very sophisticated at 65. I can spot whose hands are up. I don't need the assistance of the secretary. Yeah, are they here?
Yeah. BTFA has joined, Chairperson.
Good. Over to you, sir, madam. Go ahead. You've got 15 minutes. Welcome. BTFA, please.
Mr. Tembe.
Can you assist? We're losing a lot of time, eh? It's now 15:06. I was just 1 minute late because I rushed to get something done. I was also part of a funeral for Comrade Ibrahim, Smiley Ibrahim, and I'd cut off from there.
Hi, Mr. Tembe. I see his mic is on, Chairperson.
Well, then he can speak without the video. It's fine. We allow that. Sorry.
Maybe, Chairperson, we can take the SATA, because I
see they here?
They've joined as well.
Yeah, can you please, one of you please, it's now 15:07. Can one of you please make the input? It's unusual for us to be held up by 7 minutes.
Mr. Sibisi. Hey.
Chairperson, this presenters, they seem not to take us serious.
Yeah, well, we'll give them a few more minutes and then call it off, unless we want to start discussing it. Although the discussion is for tomorrow. National Treasury, have you read their written submissions? I'm going to look at them tonight, obviously. One likes to hear them first and then look at what they've said. So, National Treasury, do you want to respond to their written submissions, which you would have got by now? National Treasury.
Good afternoon, Chair.
Yeah.
We have read the written submissions, and we wish to state that they are not different from the written submission that they submitted on SCOF, but we are ready. We can respond orally, poised here. He can respond orally.
Can we respond? Because let me tell you, the first question I was going to ask you as the Chair to facilitate the discussion is what is different in what they've said here from what they said to the National Assembly Committee? You've answered that question. Nevertheless, nothing stops us if we're convinced about what they're saying that, you know what, we don't agree. Now, if that's the case, remember, we got a very slim deadline. We will have to send the bill back to them tomorrow. Don't ask me how we're going to do that, but to find some compromise there. Because let me put it to you. I thought there's going to be responses in the House this morning from the provinces. And because no other province responded, I thought as KZN, I'm not going to respond and hold up the process, okay? Because a lot of us have got a multiple tasking today. And many of us had to join the virtual funeral of our veteran, Ibrahim Ismail Ibrahim. So I let it be. But I was going to raise this, and I say it again. Nobody disagrees, as we've said in the committee, that this whole process is unacceptable. I have even appealed to the opposition parties, do what you can, because we, Dikeledi and I, have done everything possible on our side. But secondly, you know, colleagues, we have to be realistic. Some of the outcomes will be no different even if we spend three times the time we are able to spend in the current circumstances of the local government election causing the delay. The MTBP is being presented in November 11th, on November 11th instead of the third week of October. Okay, this won't happen again, hopefully, ever. It was just a special circumstance of COVID, right? So people are going to cringe and scream and cry and all. You know what? Take it elsewhere, please. We all agree. There's no differences here, colleagues from other parties. You know, I think as a chair, I feel at ease about processing bills so quickly. But I'm not convinced that we would have done anything different on the Financial Sector Laws Amendment Bill. On the MTBP, as my brothers, because they're only brothers on the other side, all I want to say is, you know what, let's be real. Okay, we can't do much. It's a PFMA. It's an Adjustment Division of Revenue Bill. What would we have done? We would have written a more stringent, longer report. Well, what would we have changed? Nevertheless, it is our right. And I agree with those who said that the provinces didn't play their full part. But can I plead once again to the opposition parties? Who raised the issue? Dikeledi and I will raise it yet again. And I was going to do it in the House this morning. Comrade Dikeledi, I regret now that I didn't put my hand up and respond. Because at the very least, I could have responded to the process issue and say that in the Finance Committee, as I'm sure the Appropriations Committee also, we're not happy with what happened. And we don't want it to happen again. And we've been pleading to get the tax bills beforehand, before we get them. Because they are processed informally in the National Assembly. I hope some person or the other that's taking minutes for the NCOP committee meetings beside Nkululeko is registering all this.
Recording in progress.
Right, okay. Now, are we ready, my friends, from outside Parliament, civil society? Who's available now?
Yes, South African Tobacco Association.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, who's available?
The chairperson of South African Tobacco Transformation Alliance.
Please, my brother, go ahead. You've got 15 minutes. We are well behind time, my friend. This has never happened before, but fine. Let's go for it. Let's not belabor the time. You've got 15 minutes. It's 15:12, my friend. You got up to 15:27. Thank you.
Thank you so much, chairperson. On the outset, chairperson, I need to request a more sensible approach to the access policy to suppress the growth of illicit market, to request that excess increase be in line with inflation in order to allow the legal industry to recover and contribute to the economy and save jobs. A sensible excess will also ensure that healthy objectives are achieved by reducing the overconsumption of tobacco products due to the prevalence of cheap nanny paying tax cigarettes. We support a sensible taxes. Extreme government intervention such as the 5-month sales ban in 2010 that leads to unintended consequences. The ban led to an explosion in the illicit trade in cigarettes. It sets back the progress that SARS had made against illicit. Over 50,000 jobs have been lost across the entire value chain. The government collected almost 8 billion less in access in 2020-2021. More people than ever before smoke illicit cigarettes, setting the government's healthy agenda backwards. Our proposal, Chairperson, are as follows. Enforce existing production counter rules for all manufacturers. Stricter border control and enforcement. Rectifying the HWO protocol and implement the independent track and trace system. Implement and enforce a minimum retail sales price of 28 rand per packet of 20 sticks. Chairperson, it is unfortunate that at this point in time, I need to be telling you that now, at 2021-2022 season, the emerging farmers, mostly black, 30 of them are out of business. As I'm speaking to you, they've got nothing to do because their business has been granted because of illicit. This is a big headache to me in particular as the chairperson of the value chain, seeing our people lose jobs. If the emerging farmers could lose jobs, how much more for their workers? They need to all go and queue for grants. Just because people, they don't want to do what they are supposed to do, making enforcement in the form of making those that are not paying the due taxes pay. I'm saying this from a sore heart, chairperson. If 30 really aspirant business people, black in particular, I need to emphasize this point, are out of job for themselves, how much livelihood is suffering at this point in time? When you look at the 5 months ban on sales cigarette, the whole legal sector was given 100% market shares. And on top of that, treasury has got the guts to increase the excess by 8% when inflation is at 4.9%. How are we going to survive under these trying conditions? We are not saying we don't have to pay taxes. Taxes is the must that we need to pay, but the playing field needs to be leveled. I'm just asking, as I'm closing, Jefferson, where are we going to take these steady farmers that are out of business now? Forgetting the 200 plus workers that they are going under with. And all of them are black people. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Mr. Nsibisi. We will come back to you on that. We are familiar with some or most of the issues you've raised. There's no loss of empathy or sympathy or concern, but we will manage all the balances and we'll hear from Treasury also. Thank you, Mr. Nsibisi. The next person is from the Black Farmers Association. Is that person here in Koleleko?
Yes, Mr. Kende is here.
Please go ahead, sir. You have 15 minutes. Can you help in Koleleko?
I am trying that, Chaperson, but it seems as if the problem is on his side.
Okay, can't he do a video, a cell phone call, and we can put him on speaker or something?
Hello, Mr. Tembe?
Yes, hello. Can you hear me? Yes,
yeah, please go for it, my friend. You've got 15 minutes. It's now 15:19, according to my watch.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
The increase of proposed bail will put the excise incidence on the cigarettes most price category at 45%, which is 12.5% or 5% points higher than the National Treasury exercise policy stipulates. Dozens of the farmers have already gone out of business. As my colleague has already indicated, that 30% of the farmers now are out of business. And that has created a lot of problems for the farmers, especially the black tobacco farmers, because now we are no longer in business. And if we are no longer in business, which means we have to go and queue for grants as well. And the most popular selling cigarette, that is like Peter Stuyvesant, is down by half. Excise revenue is down by half. And at the same time, the illicit market has gone more than double size in this country. We cannot allow that situation to continue. The proposed increase will put the cost of legal cigarette prohibitive to the average consumers. It will hand the country entire cigarette market over the illicit sector. Once and for all. This is a serious crisis that we are facing in the country. We all know that. Lower sales, as you are well aware, means less excise revenue rather than more, which is short-sighted to say that very less. Government must focus on putting the place the effective customers and excise administration and enforcement systems on tobacco industry in the country before it starts looking for the excise policy. This must immediately enforce SARS production counter rules by all local manufacturers. And to the end of frequent and comprehensive audit of all manufacturers, stricken borders control and enforced a ratification of the World Health Organization protocol and implement the implementation of the independent track and trace system, which is very critical for us in South Africa, and implement full enforcement of minimum retail sales price, which is MPC, of 28 to 26. In conclusion, would like to record that bringing to our attention that a fully endorsed comments by a new finance minister, Enoch Godongwana, who quoted in News 24 on the 16th of August, 2021, as saying that there will be no additional tax measures in the medium-term expenditure framework. We fully support this view, and we trust that as his line department, the National Treasury, will adopt the same view. We, as farmers, we strongly believe that a government should be able to assist us. We are not saying we don't want to pay tax. We definitely want to pay tax, and we'll keep on paying tax, but we'll request the government to meet us halfway and to make sure that we keep these jobs rather than losing these jobs. And we make sure that we put food on the table as farmers, and even our employees are getting paid. We request that government should put strict measures to make sure that we all are treated the same, not other farm, other people who are producing and selling illicitly are getting free access in the country, and we don't get that access. So that crippled the business, as we all know. We request that, Chair, you take this thing seriously, because it's really, really a serious problem for the farmers. It's very sad for us, because we are working with farmers, and we are the farmers, to see people out of business and out of job. So please, please help us. I thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, over then to members. Any hands are up? Let's see. Let's see. Mr. Ryder?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, we have Mr. Ryder and Mr. Moletsane. Anybody else? Colleagues, friends, comrades? Okay. Mr. Ncibisi and Mr. Tembe, we will first hear, as you must gather from the agenda, from our members. Then we will hear from National Treasury. Then we will hear from the members again, and then we will process the matter tomorrow. Okay, over then to you, Dennis.
Chair, thanks very much. Look, I think the presentations are fairly straightforward, and perhaps the simplest question would just be to say to Treasury, what is being done to stem the flow of illicit imports of tobacco, where people are not paying full value in terms of the taxes that are required. You know, it is obvious when you can walk into a shop and buy a packet of cigarettes for an amount that is less than the total amount of taxes that are due on a packet of cigarettes, that there's a problem. So, if we can just have some insight from Treasury, what is being done specifically through SARS, and their work with the customs officials to ensure that the flow of illicit cigarettes is stemmed. If you can give us some input on that, please. Thank you.
Okay, over to Mr. Moletsane. Simon.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question will be both to Mr. Shadrack Msibisi and Mr. Jabulani Tembe. Mr. Msibisi mentioned that 30 black farmers, they have lost their businesses during the period of COVID-19, being affected by when the government closed for 5 months for tobacco not to be sold. I just want to check with them whether did they get any financial assistance from the government in order to try and save their businesses, at the same time to save the jobs of the employees. And whether did they make any request for financial assistance from the government? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. If I may respond on this one.
My friend, Mr. Ntsibisi, we will give you a chance. Okay. Everybody needs to be heard first, and then you will come in, right? You will have plenty of opportunities. In fact, neither of you used up your 15 minutes, so you're welcome to speak more fully than otherwise when you reply. Is there anybody else before we come back? No. All right. In the meanwhile, can I raise the following issues? Firstly, Mr. Ntsibisi. Sorry. Hello?
Yes, Chair.
I wanted to say something, Chair.
Yes, Nkululeko. Go ahead.
No, I say I thought Mr. Mkiva wanted to say something.
No.
Oh. Zolani, do you want to say something?
No, I didn't want to say something. I just pressed the button by mistake. Sorry, Chair.
Yeah, that's because you've not been around for a while. You've forgotten, my brother. But fine, we understand. I'm teasing you, Zolani, as you know. Okay, now on a more serious note, perhaps I should start with that. We are asked to take this matter very seriously. Indeed, we do. Mr. Ntsibisi, Mr. Tembe, please know.
Yes.
We obviously take this matter very seriously. You know, you've been saying, or you said, 50,000 jobs have been lost. Even if one job was lost, it's enough to raise our hackles, make us angry, and think, what can we do? We can't afford to lose even half a job, okay? So there, as far as that goes, don't please misunderstand, us. We are, I think, across all parties, vigorously opposed to any job losses, especially as, you know, we now have unemployment in the mid-40%, right? And there's no prospect on the horizon that that will improve dramatically in the next year or so. Just look at our economic growth rates, our investment rates, and so on. There are no jobs looming. They're out there. So you have our full sympathy, empathy, and support. Moral concerns are there. That's not the issue. But obviously, sir, and your colleague, Mr. Ember, we have to balance out various aspects. Now, as you well know, tobacco is a major health challenge. And the Department of Health and other departments, the ministers, in other departments, the departments as a whole have quite a few, to put it mildly, reservations about tobacco and what its effect is on health. The same applies to liquor and so on. But as this committee and the committee, Dikeledi Mashlangu and I served in the previous term, have said, nobody's going to give up smoking or even drinking. And we need to find the right balance. Therefore, smoking is here to stay for a long while. Many of us feel that our country was very socially advanced to ban tobacco smoking, initially indoors and then later in public places outdoors too. Not sure what the rules are now. Because Zana Dlamini Zuma was the minister at the time. We were one of the first countries in the world to do it, and we were highly congratulated by the WHO and others. But we're not naive, it's here to stay. So what do? We need to find the balances. So on the one hand, we are very committed to Black emerging farmers in every sphere. And we are very opposed to job losses in every sphere. And we're opposed to job losses, sirs, not just if they affect Africans, but people of all races. Doesn't matter, ultimately. But as usual, in all crises, it's African people, given the racialized nature of our inequalities, who mainly suffer, not solely, but mainly suffer. And to say that while that does evoke lots of moral and other social concerns, on the other hand, all of us are human beings. And if we lose our jobs, the effects on our families are very, very severe, no matter which background we come from or which part of the world we come from. So you have our full sympathy. Nobody will disagree with your underlying moral and other economic concerns about jobs. So I would like to put a question to Treasury right now to save time. And I think Mr. Ryder is also raising questions of Treasury. And in a way, Mr. Moletsane, by asking you, is also asking Treasury. But to stop repeating ourselves, in my case, I'm going to say, Mr. Yanga and Puta, can you tell me whether that figure is accurate? As you know, 50,000 jobs lost. The other figure that's offered by Mr. NCMB, is 8 billion rand less in excess because of, the illicit tobacco sector. Thirdly, Mr. Ntsimbisi, this is a question to you specifically. You say production counter rules for manufacturing. Can you explain what that is? We observe what just said about the WHO. Now, you say about 30 farmers, both of you say, emerging farmers have lost, closed down. Treasury, do you know how many established farmers have also closed down? Because obviously they employ workers, mainly African workers. So even if the owner is white or Indian or whoever, then, the job losses are borne mainly, not only on African workers. So those are also important workers. Doesn't matter whether it's emerging or established farmers. Now, the obvious question I'll put to Treasury now, because this is a question, Mr. Sibisi and Mr. Tembe, will you please answer this question? To what extent has National Treasury entered into negotiations with you before they finalize the tax bills as they affect you? Secondly, a question to you again. You went to the National Assembly Committee. You presented this. Why do you think they said no to you? Can you tell us why you think the National Assembly Committee, which is a primary committee in terms of our constitution and 75 bills, section 75 bills, which do not affect the power and function of provinces, why do you think they said no to you? I'm sure they have the same concerns, right? So, Treasury, can you also answer that question? After the two gentlemen have spoken, when you reply to their matters of concern, will you tell us why you think National Treasury turned it down? Why do you as Treasury turn it down? Then I want to raise also that we are aware, gentlemen, that actually it's the COVID-19 restrictions that have opened the lockdowns and what have you, that have opened the door to illicit tobacco. We are opposed vigorously to illicit tobacco and the trade that goes with it. But we also have become slightly more sophisticated in our understanding of issues since we first entered the family of finance in 2014, in the case of at least two of us in this committee. We have had colleagues, friends, but also our friends from civil society. If you don't know, we've raised this before. We've had major meetings with the tobacco trade. We brought in all parties, I think, particularly in 2018. We set out a route, and when we called in after that, we called in all the agencies, not just National Treasury, everybody, SARS, everybody, right? SARS is also very concerned about this issue because obviously you're losing out, as you've said, sir, Mr. Ntsimbisi, on the tax. And the country loses out. So, what we want to ask is Treasury, can't we find some compromises in? Can't we balance things out? Now, we once again want to repeat, as much as we can go back to Parliament and say, we want this matter reviewed. We cannot change anything because these are what you call Section 75 bills, where the provincial powers and functions are not affected. And we can only recommend to the National Council of Provinces, House sitting, the plenary, the NCOP as a whole, look, we're not happy with this. Here's our report. Please, can you refer it back to the National Assembly Committee? It'll then go to the Speaker and will go to the House Chair of Committees and then it'll be referred back to Mr. Joe Maswangani as the Chair of that committee. We can't change things. That is why we argue with people. With textbooks, you've got to fight your battles there in the National Assembly. But the Constitution obliges us to give a second consideration to even 75 votes, and nothing stops us from making changes. But in order to make changes at this late hour, which has got nothing to do with you gentlemen, it has to do with the local government elections. You weren't here at the beginning. It has to do with the delay by the Minister of Finance. By, you know, normally we get the medium-term budget policy statement when the bills are introduced by the third week of October this year, as you know, for the special circumstances that arose. We only got it on the 11th of November. Then ourselves, we had to wait for the National Assembly to process it. Side by side with that, we have to process the fiscal framework and now, of course, the Division of Revenue votes. So we are where we are. This matter is not going to fall away. I strongly feel that by next year's tax bills, you two organizations and whoever else should meet with Treasury and SARS and deal with this matter comprehensively. Younger, my friend, you know what? I would like the members to consider, Esther's there, and so is my friend Poppy and my other friend in Puleko, all three of my friends. Esther is very much my friend at the moment because of a wonderful report on the financial sector. And she's my most favorite of my three friends there. So right now. So Esther, can you please also look into a draft where we say that, look, man, this matter has to be settled somehow, some compromise that we found. And we're not going to allow any more bills to come here. And I'm going to go to speak to Mr. Sangani and persuade him and the committee on that side, including the work there, that Treasury mustn't just come here and dump these bills on us. And as far as this particular area is concerned, they must give us a report on what the level and extent of negotiations are. Mr. Can you prepare? You don't have to do it now. Sometime when Parliament rises next week, can you prepare a brief, maybe a page or two, that we can send around to committee members to add to? There's no hurry. And if you can get it done before, like, you know, third week of December, I'm around, you know, up till about the 20th, 21st. But then they won't get access to me easily until around the 10th of January, 8th of January onwards. So even if you give us to us shortly after those first few days of January, 8th, 9th, 10th, say after that, let's do something. And let's go and persuade the NA committee offline that this is what we should send to Treasury before February and say, don't come here with these bills unless you've negotiated and give us a report. So they must give us a report of the extent to which they negotiated on this area, right? Bringing all the parties together, COSATU, the established tobacco industry, etc. And then only will we call it collectors. But it's time now we flexed our muscle, even with Treasury. Okay? We're going to tell them, no, we're not processing this matter. Let's defer the bill. If they do not come with a report, if they bring further amendments here. Now, we also have to be clear that, you know, things are complex. I'm no expert in this area. I've met all of you in different ways, but not necessarily. I don't know if I met Mr. Tembe and Mr. Insebisi personally. And I don't know, you know, organizations come and go. I've met with the African Farmers Associations. They're established farmers. I've had telephonic exchanges with them. They have come into the office there in the old assembly wing that I have. And that's before COVID, obviously. And we've had discussions. And I've referred them. In fact, the group of that committee, that wonderful Tandi Tobias Pukula, was, I think, in one or other of the meetings, but she was informed about all of it. So we have met, and I'm reasonably familiar, but the truth of the matter is, as I read then and subsequently, it's quite complex. Those who are in the established tobacco sector, who claim to be doing legal tobacco trade, even before COVID hit us, colleagues, maybe involved in illicit tobacco. The line between what is illicit and licit, if there's such a word, legal, is really very, like, blurred now. I'm not making any moral judgments. No, I mean, we support emerging farmers and established farmers. Why would we not support established farmers? We support job retention and job growth. But, and we support also health considerations. We need to find all these balances. So there it is. It's a very complex area, colleagues. We should avoid knee-jerk reactions there. We shouldn't be impulsive. We shouldn't be driven just by moral considerations. There are moral economic, trade, and other considerations. If I had my own way, as I think the majority party would probably all agree, and maybe to some other degree others, it's this. You know what? In this very murky, nefarious, illicit tobacco trade, some of these people, I'm not saying all of them, are accused, alleged, okay, let me put it first, are allegedly involved in organized crime and illicit activities of a criminal nature through what they get through the illicit tobacco trade. We have been saying, colleagues, and I think to some or other degree, all parties, no to money laundering, no to base erosion and profit shifting, no to illicit financial flows. Now, here's an example of, you know, of this thing going on in different forms and the interlinks between this and other forms of illicit financial flows. And you and I know, all, I speak of my own town, the allegations against people and what they do in the illicit tobacco trade. And of course, they give this money to churches and mosques and temples and synagogues and so on. And they go to all these religious institutions to worship. So they are legitimized in our society. It's a very complex area, Mr. Temba, Mr. NCBC. You know these things more than I do. I'm just alerting some of the newer members that we should be cautious about, you know, trading in this area. It's too complex. But Treasury also, you know what? It's time now. We just told you off, really. Consult with people and find the right balances. And you know what? Don't come to us with these things without showing us what you've done in consultation terms. Thank you. I know I made a long speech, but you know what? We are at least 200% ahead of time. We haven't even used up the first hour. I wouldn't normally talk, Mr. Tembe, Mr. NCBC. Of course, Mr. Ryder won't agree. But I wouldn't normally talk as long as that, okay? But am I to blame that other members don't put their hands up? No. Am I apologetic that I said what I said? No. Will I say the same things again? Yes, if it's necessary. You know what? I want to hold Treasury most to account here. You must come with legitimate arguments, really. You must come with showing that you know, you work very hard. Younger, I have the highest regard for you and your team. I don't agree with you necessarily policy-wise, right? But I really have the highest regard for your work ethic and your technical skills. And I know there are limits, and I know that COVID restricts those limits yet further. But can you please consult with these people and don't come back with bills, not least, not while I'm chairing here for the next how many years if I survive that long? 3 more years, right? So we're not having it. I'm going to persuade my colleague on the other side. Right. Over then to you, Mr. NCBC, and then Mr. Tembe. Tembe. Okay, Mr. NCBC, my friend.
Thank you so much, Chair. I think I had to first answer Mr. Mozale's first question, if the government have helped us with anything.
Oh, yes, I was going to ask you that anyway, and he asked it before me. Yes, yeah, good question, Mr. Molotsane.
Unfortunately, Mr. Molotsane, nothing has come out from the government. I've been aware of this crashing thing as way back in June, where I started engaging my provincial Department of Agriculture, alerting them about the situation that befalls our farmers. Up to now, nothing has come, zero. And the farmers are out without job. I'm not talking of their workers, the farmers themselves. And coming to this value chain thing, Mr. Chair, when we talk of value chain, we talk all the components that come to produce what we call a tobacco product. Then, only 90% of the leaf that is produced in South Africa is being procured by LTP, Limpopo Tobacco Processors. The rest is not procured in South Africa. Even that might be the case, that the Zimbabwean leaf is much cheaper. But then coming to the tax collection, if you will find a packet selling less than 21.60, which is the minimum collectible price and tax, where have they paid the 21.60 to? That's the question I'm putting to Treasury. because they are the money collectors. Those are the kind of criminals that are doing it openly, so trading freely. We are asking that the playing field need to be leveled, and the WHO protocol, it needs to be implemented, because South Africa is a signatory to that effect, but up to now, nothing has come up from South Africa to rectify trace and tracking system. With the, let's come again with the implementation of the minimum retail price rates of 28 rand, that will safeguard, knowing exactly that anything selling below that is not tax compliant. They need to be across the board price target, so that we will know exactly these people are selling according to the book. But now, the whole tobacco industry, it's a 50%+ on the illicit, because they are selling below the collectible tax price. That's not a secret, it's an open. So, Chairperson, I would sincerely request that for once in a lifetime, let's look at the value chain, those massive job losses. No one ever come to say, I'm putting this to you, Chairperson, in particular, that during the ban on the cigarette sales for 5 months, I never heard Treasury, nor you, Chairperson, in particular, saying, how can you ban the sale of tobacco when you know already that 42 market shares of the product is in the hands of illicit? If you ban this, you are giving automatically 100% market shares to the criminals, which no one challenged. Even the health department never challenged that, knowing that people were smoking freely without paying a cent. How do you say that the ground is level if it's like that? This is the consequences of the 5 months ban, the 30 black farmers that are out of business. And the government is not coming to assist, because tobacco is no go area. But let me say this. The tobacco that we are producing, it was started in 2010 while the Department of Agriculture was there. We are being assisted with nobody, but the product came, they were roped in. We made a good livelihood out of that. And that is being taken away from us by our government, so that we can go back and queue for grants. What kind of society are we going to be? And let thugs run the show, nilly-willy, and let the legal industry that is paying to the fiscus go under in the watch of all the law enforcement agencies that we have in the country. If anyone would have said, no, how can you ban the sale of cigarette when you know that 42% of the market share is already in the hands of illicit? No one says that. And people are bold enough to say they can listen to the criminals. And now they are busy doing their daily business. Our people are out of work. The 50 is just a number, but I know it's more than that, because there are people that depends on our farmers working on the field, but now that has been taken away. And now the 8% excise on top of the 5 months of lockdown, it's another way of lockdown. Excise means the legal cigarette is more expensive. Illicit sells at 100%. That's what excise says. at this point in time. It's not a ban for 5 months, but people will go for the cheapest that don't pay tax. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Just a quick question. Why do you think the National Assembly Committee didn't agree with you?
Because nothing is happening, Chair. Now we have been called now to defend a bill that was supposed to have discussed in 2018. Now in 2021, they are bringing that very same bill 3 months after 5 months of lockdown. How do you call that? How do you even suggest that they can go ahead and do that? Be an engagement. After 5 months of a cigarette ban. Now, it seems nothing has changed. It's unfortunate. I'm not saying this because I want to say this, but I'm feeling the pain because I know where the farmers that I'm talking about are today without food in their table, not for them, for their kids, for their workers, for the community that they live in.
No, we understand, yeah. Okay, thank you, Mr. Tembe.
Thank you, Chair. One, I would appreciate that you have raised some of the issues and the questions that you are posing to the National Treasury as well as to us as black farmers. I think the biggest challenge that we are facing here is the issue of the ban of tobacco, which had a serious implication to the industry. And we fully understand that we are a few farmers, black farmers, who are participating in this industry. And that is a big challenge for us because we had to go an extra mile to invest more on the equipment and everything. And all of a sudden, we are out of business and we are stuck with this material and the equipment that we cannot use. Coming to your question, the question whether we did apply for assistance from the government, we did. But it's so unfortunate that if you talk about tobacco in South Africa, it's like you are touching an area that is untouchable. Even if you go to the government departments and say, we are the farmers here, we need an assistance. Once you touch tobacco, everybody runs away from you. I don't know what is it that we as South Africans, we want to do. What is it that the government is trying to achieve? Because yes, the ban had an impact, but we anticipated that once the ban is over, we'll sit down with the government and say, with Treasury and other, with SARS and everybody, how do we then try and mitigate and try to resolve the issues? Because they are the issues. The industry is not going any further. It's going down and down. How do we then try and resuscitate those businesses, those farmers? How can government help us? We are not going to government and say, we need your money. We need your fully assistant. We are trying the way we are trying up to this stage. But what we are saying to government, put a strict measures with regards to the incoming cigarettes coming from neighboring countries and make sure that the laws are being obeyed. You know, you'll find that Shadrach spoke about the prices. You can't have a situation where you go to a filling station and you find a pair of cigarettes, 20 pair of cigarettes, at an amount of 20 rand, 19 rands. The Treasury and the custom should be asking, where did you get that cigarette? Why is it so cheap? It's below the money that, it's below tax. So it's obvious that there is an issue. But these people are working freely. Nobody is touching them. Nobody is asking what's going on. We try to engage them because there was a once question that was raised. What is it that we are doing as BTFA to make sure that these issues are being addressed? We have been at SARS. We have engaged Department of Agriculture. We have engaged law enforcement agencies. but there's nothing that they are coming to help us or even to say, because we are trying this, this is where we can come in and assist. Not in terms of assisting, but to make sure that the laws are being, you know, implemented. You know, because that's what we are trying for. If there is somebody selling a cigarette at 21 rands, so rather everybody sell it at 21 rand rather than allowing others people a fair chance to do business. And we are paying tax, but we are not allowed a tax. And we are being fringed a right to pay tax. And we are being fringed the right to be able to sustain our farms and sustain our businesses. That is a serious problem, Chair, that we are facing. I think I really appreciate, Chair, the way you talk today, because really these are the issues that we felt that we need to do and address it. We have been talking since 2018, 2019, before the lockdown. At that particular time, Chair, the illicity was 32% in South Africa, but currently it's 62% after the lockdown. What is it that the government is doing to make sure that they minimize that? Or else if they can work with us, because we are willing to work with government, we're willing to work with SARS, we're willing to work with Treasury, and make sure that at least, the illicity goes to 40%. It can make a big difference in our industry. At least if you can try and do that. So, Chair, we plead to you and we plead to the members present today to make sure that they help us to try and drop this 62% at least to 40%, because we can start making business. But currently, we can't make business. We as black farmers, we have stock and stock of tobacco for last year. We can't sell it. Where to sell it? Because the people who are buying from us, they've got a lot of stock. They cannot sell it as well. So we are stuck. And it is a problem. That's why we're out of business. So I'm requesting, Chair, that please, and the parliament there, and the members present, to make sure that they assist us. It's not the outcry for us as black farmers. Even the white commercial farmers, they are now moving away from tobacco to other crops. And that will have an impact, seriously impact, because the Department of Health is complaining about the health issues about cigarettes, of which we fully agree with that. But we, as we are doing a legitimate business, we are trying by all means to minimize the nicotine in our cigarette that we supply and we sell to the people. But unfortunately, Chair, the illicit cigarette, it's more on, there's a lot. They don't even do anything to make sure that they minimize nicotine. And they're selling freely. And that is a big harm to the community. Can you imagine from 32% in the past 2 years or so? Now they are at 62%. How much harm are we talking about here in the society? It's a lot. So please, let's try. And we're not saying we don't want to engage. We do try and engage. But unfortunately, Chair, we are not getting any feedback. We'll do a presentation as we are doing it today. There will be nobody who will give us a feedback as to what happened. We'll see in the next few months or so, the bill will be in place, and it will be in law, and it will be, you know, will be like, what happened? Because we presented, it's like when we do our presentation, nobody listens. So that's our serious concern as black farmers. But we hope that whatever you said today, I think it gives a light, and even other members, and even the government departments, including the Department of Agriculture and SARS, they'll begin to listen, because they don't listen to us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Tembe. Before we hand over to Treasury, perhaps I should clarify in case I misunderstood. Once again, the issues you raise, as far as I can tell, and unless anybody from my party, ANC, or anybody in this committee says otherwise, one takes it that This is the view of the majority, perhaps even all of us. One, can I repeat, says that one, you know, we empathize with you. We are concerned about job losses, about emerging black farmers, but also established farmers. We employ people who come mainly from the disadvantaged communities. So there's no disagreement on that. Secondly, to some other degree, all of us are concerned to balance your needs and interests. It's the same with the sugar beverages tax, colleagues, the same balances with that of the, health sector. Thirdly, I hear Mr. NCBC, but it would be inappropriate, sir, for me to issue a statement, because you balance out all the needs and interests of all the sectors and interest groups, and there's no mandate. You see, a chairperson can issue statements outside of meetings and outside of getting a mandate, provided what he or she says is consistent with previous decision taken or the views of the majority, in which case sometimes we issue statements, say, the majority in the community committee believes. So we're not including other parties that disagree with the majority. So, you know, we've been careful as committee chairs to draft things appropriately. It's the majority if the other parties don't agree in a committee, or we say the committee if we know there's agreement. But at the time these lockdowns came, it was an unprecedented situation with the NCBC. It wasn't a decision simply of the Treasury. It was a decision of the government as a whole, guided by scientists. And it would be inappropriate for me, on behalf of the NCOP, especially where it affects an issue that affects the country as a whole, not just the provinces, to issue any statement. But I suggest, Mr. NCBC, we couldn't have asked or expected of Mr. Joe Masangane to issue a statement, or the chairperson of the health committee in both houses. So I understand your frustration. I agree with your irritation and frustration, but there was nothing I could do. But if there was something I could do and I didn't do it well, that's my fault, and I account for that, and the committee can chastise me or the NCOP. I also think, Mr. Tembe, you should be careful about thinking this bill won't go through in some or other form. It's not something, these issues cannot be addressed. Yeah. What I have set out, and I still have to convince the NA committee, they may not agree with us, that the next time Treasury comes with this set of proposals, they must show us that they have consulted properly. Thirdly, I take it that both your organizations made submissions on the gazetted versions of the vote, and I know that you made these submissions to the National Assembly. On the matter of you not getting a response, Mr. Tembe, well, you're getting a response right now, in the next 2-3 minutes. In fact, immediately, there will be a response. You may not be happy with the response, but I hardly think it's fair to say you're not going to get a response. You're going to get a response. You're probably not going to be happy with most of what Treasury says. We may not be happy with some of it, but we can't do what you want us to do immediately. There are too many balances to sort out, and there are constitutional constraints on what an NCOP committee can do on a Section 75 bill that doesn't affect the direct powers and functions of provinces. What we are setting out is the future consideration of the issues. So please do not say, I won't be around. You know, I'm here in Parliament since 94, and I'm hardly going to be around for long. So I don't want, when I'm not around, for people to say, you see Mr. NCBC, Mr. Tembe, you'll say, that fellow with that part of the big mouth, Karim, he promised all these things. Well, I haven't promised anything. Nothing, actually. I've just raised the issues. If the committee agrees, it'll go into our report, which report in Kolelekwa, our wonderful secretary, will send you. That report will provide the basis for what we do hereafter. And then it means the National Assemblies agree with the report that in future, they must tell us what they're doing, National Treasury, before they come. We have to bring COSATU in, we have to bring the established farmers in, we have to bring the SARS in. It's a lot of stakeholders, and it can't be resolved before Parliament rises next Thursday. But now over to you, Yanga, and your team. Other members, can I suggest you come in when we hear National Treasury? I had to clarify any sort of, let's say, misunderstandings that might occur about what my input suggests for what we can do before 15th of December. Over to you, Yanga, please.
We just want to say up front, we empathize with the situation that has been presented in this committee today. And SARS will talk about the efforts that they've made together with the enforcement agencies in fighting illicit tobacco. And Impo from Treasury will respond regarding the price as well as need to balance the health issues as well as the pricing that we do on tobacco. Over to you, Mpo and France. Thank you.
Mpo and France, I'm not going to intervene and say, okay, Mpo and France, you know those, the deal. You just speak one after that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and thanks, Honorable Members. Maybe before I maybe deal with sort of the specific issues with regards to excise, I'll just ask Chris maybe to answer some of the general questions around, you know, the way we work around this formulation of the proposals and how they finally get into the budget before I deal with the specific issues on excise. Chris?
Yeah, fine. But can I alert all three of you that you also have to respond to the written submission by BATSA, right? Because their written submission has to be responded to you no less than the oral submission. So when you respond, respond to all three submissions received, including the written one. Thank you. Over to you, Chris.
Sorry, thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. I mean, there were quite a few comments there. I mean, as Yanga mentioned, we are very concerned about the impact that this has on legitimate tobacco farmers. We do you know, take those concerns into account. I think in the discussions that we have with a lot of the tobacco farmers and tobacco manufacturers, cigarette manufacturers, you know, the big concern here is on illicit trade. We've taken a view in the last few years, and Chair, you mentioned the meeting that you had with SARS and others on illicit trade, that this really needs to be squashed through improved enforcement. I mean, that was part of the reason that National Treasury and the Ministry of Finance allocated a greater amount of funding for SARS in the previous budget. So they were given an extra $3 billion over the MTEF, for which they could then use part of that money to improve the enforcement to try and reduce illicit tobacco. And they have been doing quite a lot there. So SARS will come in, but they have been putting in new procedures, new counters, new staff to go and check manufacturing companies for tobacco to actually try and reduce this flow of illicit tobacco. And that has, we've heard from industry and from others that those efforts have been welcomed and they are doing some work to try and reduce it, but obviously not as much as they should. But our view has been that the excise tax policy itself shouldn't be seen as a way to try and counter this. You know, we shouldn't be reducing excise duties on cigarettes to try and avoid illicit tobacco. It really is an enforcement issue. On some of the questions that you put forward, 50,000 jobs lost. When we look at the QLFS and other data, it doesn't look as large as that. It isn't broken down as specifically as tobacco, but if you take the portion of agriculture, we don't think it's that much. But when we look at the actual amount that they say it's about 8 billion rand lost in illicit revenue, we think it actually could be bigger. If you look at some of the surveys around the illicit market share, it's very large, which would then imply a larger illicit amount of revenue lost there. We don't know how many established farmers have closed down. We do, on the minimum collectible price, we have noted those comments both from BATSA and from SATA. You know, that's something that we've been discussing internally and we're thinking about. There are some worries, for example, if you have a minimum collectible price, then all the cigarettes go up to that price. And it's more difficult to differentiate between which producers are clearly illicit and which aren't. And then the illicit ones then get much, much bigger jumps in revenue That's what you've seen in some of the other countries that we've investigated. And suddenly you're actually giving a lot more money to the illicit producers. You know, do we engage with the industry? You know, we do. If they would like to meet, we would meet with them. We do meet with other tobacco manufacturers. There was a question about, you know, why did Treasury turn you down? I mean, I think, you know, the excise duty increase was announced by the minister in the budget, and it was effective, you know, on that day, you know, in the budget. So it's been effective for most of this year. So I think it's, you know, this is the legislation that's putting effect to that ministerial announcement. You know, we do look at these issues. Chair, you were asking us to go and negotiate, you know, with industry and then ask for a report. You know, to be honest, it's quite difficult because if we can't really negotiate with one sector or one particular interest on these tax policy issues. So I think, as you were saying, you know, there are lots of other stakeholders here. You need the Department of Health involved. There are lots of health impacts. You need, you know, other NGOs. You know, there's a lot of inputs that come into this particular policy area. You know, we provide advice, you know, to the minister on what we think is the most appropriate way, but we try and look at all of those. So it is slightly difficult to negotiate just with one and sort of come back with a view. I think that covers most of the things, but Umpo maybe wanted to get in some of the further specifics from those.
Can I raise something quickly to save time? Maybe I was misunderstood. Look, we know all over the world, right? Excise taxes. They are announced by the Chancellor of the Exchequer or the Minister of Finance, or I don't know what they call the Minister of Treasury or whatever they call them all over the world, right? Any democracy. We don't expect, that'll be bizarre, that you will introduce increases in the customs and taxes part of the tax revenue for, let's say, the wine industry, on beer and so on. And then you, in the case of the tobacco industry, you negotiate with them. No, it's not about the amounts. It is about dealing with the broader structural challenges. It is about, you know, understanding better. You see, before you increase the prices, right? Every February, when the minister comes, you have to take all these balances into account. So please, I'm not asking you to do something that clearly in 2014 you explained. We tried and tried, the lady will tell you, to stymie your VAT increase. People threatened to go to the courts, constitutional courts, who remember civil society. They never did. Because, you know, it is debatable whether they would have won, but you never know with the constitutional court, right? On a VAT bill, unlike the normal customs and excise increases each year with tobacco and wine and so on. Okay, so don't misunderstand me. Chris, what I'm saying is, yes, you can't only consult with these two organizations or banks. You have to consult with everybody. That's what we say. We're not saying that the actual amount, you must tell us how you negotiated that. No, that you must do after taking into account their concerns here, the two institutions, organizations here, and also others who make submissions on these issues. Do you understand? Now, what's the problem in proposing that? So do we all, right? You will say you consulted. They will say you didn't consult. Then you will show us how the meetings you had, and they will say, yes, but it's not meaningful consultation. It's like going through the motions. You know, then you will say, that's not true. This is what we did. This is what we wanted to do, and this is the concession made. They will say, yes, but the concessions don't deal with the issues. It goes around in circles. All I'm telling you is that, look, it is merely a suggestion. Esther will craft something, and the committee will decide. If what I'm saying is infeasible, we will drop it. But what I'm saying is not that you must not that you must discuss with them all of them and say, okay, what increase is it that you're agreeable to? And people know that before you even have the minister doing it in the budget in third week of February, okay? So respond to what I've just said. Can't it be done? Yeah. You know, my brother, I'm here now, how long? 7 years, right? I know all this stuff. But here's a very clever answer. A very technically sound answer. Who can fight it? That's what I'm saying. Okay.
Yeah, but understood, Che. Thanks. That's fine. I didn't mean to misunderstand you.
Yeah. I'm not saying you deliberately did it, my friend. All I'm saying is, well, you have to think about it. Esther's got to help us. There's a lawyer here from the legal services unit. We, you know, then once they clarified to me, I think the wording, Esther, you draft, maybe send it to the legal services unit and let them come back to us. Advocate Jenkins in particular and his colleague who are with us. So what we couch there and draft, is that something that goes against the current norm and rules, if you like, that by which we deal with customs and excise issues, excise taxes, okay? Right, thanks. Next, please.
Paul, do you want to go ahead?
Thanks, Chair, and good afternoon, honorable members. I'll talk to the issue around the excise policy and how we set up the excise increases on an annual basis. Currently we use a policy framework as a guide for the adjustments to the excise rate every February. The current policy framework sets the targeted incident that has been referred to in the comments to 40% of the price of the most popular brand. In this case, for cigarette, it is Peter Stuyvesant. What has been happening over the past three years is that the excise increases that have been implemented every February, when you look at the price increases in the price of Peter Stuyvesant and also the increases in excise, we have observed that the price of Peter Stuyvesant hasn't been increasing at the same level as the excise, meaning that there is no 100% pass through of the excise in the price of Peter Stuyvesant. Therefore, that results in the incident being over 40%. I mean, in the presentation by the farmers, they talk about that 45% is beyond the policy framework that we have put in place, and that is so because the increases in the price of Peter Stuyvesant hasn't kept pace with the increases in excise in higher than the 40% incidence framework that we use as a policy guideline for that. And another issue about the increase in illicit market. Yes, the Disaster Management Act and the COVID situation and the decision that government made around the sales restriction of tobacco has resulted in illicit trade, and it's a concern for us and all of that in terms of from the health perspective, in a sense that the growth in illicit market basically works against the health objectives, because that market is not regulated and the consumers are exposed to quite a lot of hazardous materials from this tobacco products, and it's quite a concern for us. And when we consider the excise increases in February, we also look at the policy, the fiscal framework. Chair, you'll be aware that in the past couple of years, there have been a lot of increases in other tax instruments, and over, I think, in the past year or so, there hasn't been any increases on those other tax instrument because of the limitations that they impose in terms of raising revenue. And all of this is taken into consideration looking at the portfolio of tax instruments that we have and what the government requirements in terms of revenue is, and also achieving the health objectives, and that excise taxes is then, or the adjustments in excise taxes is considered within that broad framework of the fiscal framework. So the 8% that has been implemented, or that was proposed in the February budget, was taken in that context. So in terms of the then dealing with this issue of illicit trade, because the feeling that I'm getting from the presentation from the farmers is that yes, they are willing to be paying the excise and all of that, and the issue that is really putting their business or that is crippling their business is the issue of illicit trade, and there a lot of effort has been put in place by SARS in terms of capacitation of the illicit economy unit that deals with a lot of illicit illicit market, and there's quite a number of products that they are focusing on, and one of them being illicit trade in tobacco. And in the recent months and all of that, SARS has done quite a lot in terms of confiscation and also clamping down on illicit trade, and I think those efforts need to be commended, and I think more can still be done. And yes, the issue of the minimum unit price, we are considering it because again, it is unthinkable that that there are packs of cigarettes that are in the market that are selling for less than what the excise and the VAT on tobacco product is, and we are concerned about that, and we are looking at how we can include that policy instrument in terms of the framework for excise on tobacco products, because I think it will again assist with regards to the affordability of tobacco products if you have a minimum unit price that is much higher and covers the excise and VAT. It will deal with the issue around the affordability, but again to Chris's point that. But then even if you implement a minimum unit price, it doesn't mean then that everybody then that charges that price is necessarily tax compliant. So I think there is still a lot of work that will need to complement that policy instrument if it's implemented. And again, we are also sort of like looking at some of sort of like the legal issues around implementation of a minimum unit price. So we are considering that. And in the budget, February budget, we announced that we are doing a review of the policy framework for excise for tobacco products, and that all of these issues will be included in that review process that will be up for discussion with all the relevant stakeholders in looking at how then we can deal with this issue of illicit trade, because I think that is the sort of like the main issue that is causing a lot of issues or problems for the the policy framework that we have in terms of applying excise on tobacco products. And once that policy review is done, it will be published, and we will consult, or the stakeholders will have an opportunity to provide provide comments with regards to that. Maybe I can stop there. I don't know if then Chris, we have any further input to make, but I think maybe I should stop.
Thanks. Maybe France can come in. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. And good afternoon, Chair and honorable members. So a couple of items to my address. The one is that SARS does take the illicit trade in tobacco very seriously indeed. If you have a look at our media release page, you'll see any number of releases about tobacco products that we have seized, destroyed, a factory that we've uncovered that was illicit and closed down. If you extend your reading a little more broadly, you will see that we've gone after importers for rather substantial sums of money. And in one case that I'm aware of, that importer in fact closed down, went into liquidation. So, as I say, this is not something we take lightly. It's something that we put a good deal of focus on. Could we do more? No doubt we could. And that planning to do more is in fact in progress. And I believe there will be some report back to the Standing Committee on Finance on that issue, because they've raised it too. So perhaps we could either invite members to sit in on that particular meeting when it comes forward, or perhaps do a similar presentation to this committee too. Just on the point on production counters, I suspect the presentations may be a little out of date, because to my knowledge, those production counters are being enforced, penalties are being imposed, and I've just had a look at some correspondence that's crossed my desk with respect to some great dissatisfaction with the penalties that are being imposed, and obviously we'll be handling that dissatisfaction through the normal dispute resolution processes that are available for people who are unhappy with the penalties we impose. So that's just something to add on that respect. I don't think I have anything more really to say. On the minimum price, I can just confirm we've also done a little bit of research around this, and we are aware of some countries where, in fact, the illicit traders thought this was a great idea, because essentially it meant they could increase their price and make even greater profits from their products. So that is a difficult tightrope to walk, but as Treasury says, it's a policy instrument that they're busy exploring at the moment. I think those are my inputs for the moment. Thank you.
Right, thank you. Yes.
Can I just maybe add something to a question that was raised? I mean, with regards to the ratification of the WHO protocol on illicit trade, the Department of Health is the lead department for government in terms of ratification of that process. They are quite aware of what needs to be done, and the agency around ratification of the protocol. So they should be doing some work with regards to that, and hopefully they will be coming to Parliament quite soon around ratification of the protocol.
Thank you. All right, members, do you want to say anything in reply to Treasury's reply to the two submissions, the three submissions made? Mr. Molitsane, go ahead, please. Mr. Ryder.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want the...
Mr. Alexander, you're sort of cracking, unless it's just me, your voice. Don't you put the video off and just speak on the voice system? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just want the...
Yeah, you better now.
Thank you. I just want the Treasury to make me understand. Here are the Black emerging farmers who applied for financial assistance, who did not get who did not manage to get it. And in their response, when they were answering questions, they did clarify that they did apply for financial assistance. There was a budget that was put aside for business rescue during the COVID-19. And when I was listening to their response to the questions, even to date, they don't even know or understand why they didn't succeed to get the financial assistance. Can the Treasury maybe explain or clarify to say whether they did not meet the criteria or what was the reason for them not succeed in getting the financial assistance? Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, I was going to ask the same question. You've covered me. Dennis?
Thanks very much, Mr. Chair. Very formal today, I note. Mr. Chair, just a recommendation or a comment. You know, while we've been listening, I quickly did a search to see, you know, I don't buy cigarettes, but, you know, I know other people that do. And if I find someone selling illicit cigarettes, you know, how do I report it? So I did a quick search to see how to do that. And I note that there's not an easily available telephone number or something to make a report to. And I just think that, you know, the legitimate cigarette sellers, it would be in their interests to advertise such, perhaps on their cigarette boxes, to say, you know, report illicit sales to, and then have a number, and kind of create some sort of cooperation with the customs and excise guys, with SARS and so on, so that, you know, because once you start cutting off the supply side, then it becomes more and more difficult. But also you need to look at that retail side and, the shop owners that are selling these things. So I just, you know, I hear arguments on both sides of the coin. I just think that there is better scope for some cooperation to work together, because I think that the illicit cigarette trade is, you know, from what I've read, certainly, it's often a smokescreen for some other fairly scary things that are going on as well. And it would do us all benefit if we could get rid of this. So I'm all for more cooperation from my side. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a very good proposal, Dennis. I don't know whether it's doable, but very good. You know, sometimes, Dikeledi, Comrade Njadu, Comrade Zulani, opposition members, they are useful sometimes in a multi-party democracy. You know, this is one occasion, Riaz might be. I have to needle you too. That both Simon and Dennis have made very good. I don't know what you mean I'm so formal. My very statement now suggests I'm not. With the two gentlemen, Mr. Insipi and Mr. Stem, understand that although I make silly remarks here, it doesn't mean that the seriousness of what you're saying is not internalized. Believe me, I'm no like lame duck chair. I do a lot offline and pursue issues. But this one's too complex for me to do much without all the complexities and all the consultations necessary. I'm not offering you more than what we have said. But one thing for sure, I really, really like what Dennis is saying. I really, really like that, you know, National Treasury and also Mr. NCB and Mr. Tembe. And obviously, I agree with everything Mr. Molitsane said, Simon. And the only other issue is, don't you want to say something, Treasury, in reply to Patsa as well? The fact that they're not here doesn't mean they're not less important. Okay, over then to Treasury. Can you respond to the concerns of Mr. Dennis Ryder and Simon Molitsane and myself? Thank you. For now, I don't see anybody else. Just go for it.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the issue of financial assistance, unfortunately, when we are here, we deal with tax policy. We do not deal with that. So we cannot now provide readily answer as to whether they submitted financial assistance. Why has it not been granted? I think if maybe they can send the letters, maybe we can see which unit is dealing with it and then the response can be granted, whether which government department. So if maybe they can submit those letters whereby they submitted the financial assistance, then we can be able to answer, because our unit as tax policy, we do not deal with that. So we cannot provide a readily answer as to that.
Fine. Before we go on, Esther, can you note what Yanga said? Can the two gentlemen submit their letter to us? We will forward it to National Treasury via our committee secretary. Can you do it, gentlemen, by what's today? Tuesday. So let's say by Friday, the sooner the better. And then we must get a copy of the reply you sent to them, Yanga. And I agree with you, it's not relevant to the policy per se, but is it relevant to job losses and business collapsing and farmers particularly being debilitated? So in that sense, a broader policy issue is relevant. In that sense, Esther, do cover it in the bill. I mean, in the report on the bill, and then we will hold them to account if it doesn't happen by February next year when, you know, in fact, they come back to us. Okay, go on, Yanga.
Thank you, Chair. I think with regard to the number, that an easily available number that someone can phone if there's illicit, I think SARS is the best. They can best answer that because I think they do have numbers for reporting of fraud and all that. Franz?
Yeah, I thought they did. I was surprised, Dennis, but let's see. Over to you, Franz.
Right. So thank you, Chair. I think the suggestion was slightly different, though, because what I think was being suggested was a clearinghouse amongst the tobacco industry where that could be reported and then consolidated reports could be forwarded to SARS. And that would, I think, make a good deal more sense because we do, in fact, have a fraud line. And that is on our website and the details are there, but it isn't specifically geared to illicit tobacco. And you can imagine that if you got told about every small garage or petrol attendant or whomever is selling this, it would become quite problematic and you could quite easily flood that. So the suggestion that, in fact, you have a clearinghouse that says, well, we've had 30 reports of this particular area and so that we can properly prioritize interventions makes a good deal of sense. And it's certainly something that I think industry could take up with SARS in the course of one of our consultations with industry.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, if you type in, reporting on illicit tobacco, or illicit tobacco trade. What Dennis, I think, is saying is that it doesn't pop up as an obvious thing to contact the SARS general fraud line. So isn't there a way you can keep the one line? And one understands what you're saying. But somehow, I'm not good at all this, right? IT and all that stuff. Nkululeko may be able to help you, young as he is. You know, how you can connect these things. When you type in, or you put on your cheap cell phone even, you know, reporting on illicit tobacco or cigarettes, it leads them directly to your generic fraud line. Can that be done?
Certainly, Chair. I mean, that could be done. But I'm just pointing out that the cost of that is that you may have 20,000 people reporting that they bought an illicit packet of cigarettes. And then the one report which deals with some more substantive issue potentially sort of gets lost in that volume. Now, we can sort of try and use a bit of artificial intelligence and sorting to try and sort of sort those things into different categories. But that's why when I heard Mr. Ryder suggesting that this was something that could perhaps be done on a cooperative basis, I thought, well, that's something that could certainly be explored.
All right. Well,
if that doesn't work,
fine.
That doesn't work, then perhaps there are other options.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that, you know, I don't want a tit for tat, right? But all I'm saying is, let me choose my words carefully. So you do have a fraud line, SARS. In theory, it's possible to get 30,000 per month if everybody knew that that was the place to send notices about illicit tobacco, right? So in theory, they could still do it. The reason you don't want them to connect directly with that by the words, the simple words that I suggested or something even more simpler, you know, it's because you're concerned that you'll get so many. Fine. Now you're suggesting this clearinghouse process. And I'm not sure that Dennis meant that, but maybe he should come in and say what he had in mind. So when you have engagements with the tobacco industry, put this issue on the agenda and see whether between yourselves and the tobacco industry you can find some practicable and practical way of doing it, which doesn't burden you with endless little calls. You don't have the resources. But on the other hand, given the gravity of what's going on, given all the problems we have, given the collapse of farmers, 30 and more, given the collapse of others, farmers, you know, in the established sector, we may not even know about, and all the jobs lost and so on, and look at the money you're losing anyway. So, you know, you're the money people, right? What do I know with my E in maths and science and matric, right? You can say, hey, look, you're losing 8 billion. If you have this mess of thousands of people, you might be able to surf maybe 5% and you can even extract more money and reduce less losses. I don't know, Franz. You've been there for 4,000 or 5,000 years now. You can work these things out. No need to discuss it now. I'm saying keep the door open to what we say. You can sort out the practicalities and engagements with the people here and others. Dennis, do you want to explain what you meant?
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, look, I didn't really have a specific mechanism in mind.
That's what I thought, yeah.
And, but I do certainly understand what Mr. Tomasek's comments are. And, but again, it's in the interest of the organized industry. It's also in the interest of SARS. Because, you know, if you find the retailer, he's going to put you in contact with his dealer, who's going to put you in contact with the wholesaler, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think there certainly are benefits. How you want to get into the mechanism, you know, is kind of up to you. I do see benefit of industry running, as you say, a clearing house or the big call center. But, you know, frankly, do it on an app. I can get, you know, someone to design an app for you in 20 minutes that, you know, they will be able to drop a pin and so on. And then, you know, you can look for areas of high concentrations. There's all sorts of things you can do. I don't have the specifics. If I did, I'd probably be a lot richer than I am, and I wouldn't need my job in Parliament. Thank you.
Dennis, it's time now you walked over to the ANC. You make such good points. I think Mr. Njalo has the word. You need to speak to him, right? I mean, really, he's making such good points that he should join the party that makes good points, ANC. So will you put that on the agenda, Mr. Njalo, and report to the Chief Whip's office on that? Right. Now, you know what? I think we've covered the issues for now, but is there anybody from the committee side who wants to say anything? No.
Just from my side, I wasn't aware that hell had frozen over, so I'm going to go down and check with
you. Okay. Now, I like what you just said. Now, Franz must be itching to reply. Franz, do you absolutely want to reply? He's not saying do exactly what he said, but he's suggesting to you the possibilities. I'm not entirely convinced you can't find a compromise what you're saying and what he's saying. But anyway, do you want to say anything to be fair to you, Franz? You have a right of reply.
Chair, sometimes it's wiser to remain. Chair, sometimes it's wiser to remain silent.
That's one of the rare occasions. Right, you haven't got a spot to reply. Okay, Dennis, you floored the fellow. Okay, right, I'll leave it to you, Franz, and your creativity. Okay. Before we draw to a close, I think in fairness, let's ask Mr. Ncebisi and Mr. Tembe if they want to just make some comments briefly. If they have anything new to say.
Thank you so much, Chair. Chair, to be honest, I really appreciate seeing your attitude today, even though action speaks better than words.
Yes.
I think something will come of this, maybe to save the livelihoods. Thank you. Sure.
Thank you, Mr. NCBC. Mr. Tembe?
Chair, thanks very much. We really appreciate your time and to allow us to present our case. And we would like to thank every contributions and the comments that has been made by SARS and other government departments that are present here. And also to thank the Parliament for giving us this opportunity. Every time we learn a lot when we are in these meetings. And I think we also contribute something and we learn a lot from these meetings. We really, really appreciate and we hope that we'll be getting a feedback on our side as black farmers. Thank you, Chair. And thank you, honorable members.
Yeah, no, we thank you for your presentations. You thanking us. Actually, we need to thank you. You know what? This is your parliament. We are merely custodians here as representatives. You elect us, okay? You are the base, the foundation of a democracy. We as parliament, we're not doing you a favor. It's required by your constitution, the country's constitution, firstly. So while we don't want to sound ungracious, you don't owe us anything, as you know. We owe you. We're answerable to you, as we are to the public more generally. Secondly, I'm a bit worried about Mr. NCBC seeing too much in the exchanges here. He's absolutely right. After all this blabbering here from my side, let's start with that. What does it mean? It's just merely words. It's action that comes. But the action has to take into account, and we agree with Treasury and France and the SARS, just to account, to take into account all the interests, right? Thirdly, it's not enough for civil society actors like yourselves to come here, make representations, and then expect somehow Parliament will deliver overnight. I have always said, gentlemen, that, you know what? A democracy is only alive if people put pressure on Parliament. That you lobby Parliament, you lobby the National Treasury government as a whole, the majority party, even lobby the minority parties as well. It's a democracy, you know, and so on. You got to put pressure. Activism is what brought this democracy about, and activism is what will deepen and advance it. So we're pleading with you not to give up. You know, you can also appeal. You've got common interests with COSATU and other trade union federations. No one wants job losses. But you have to balance that out with all the health sector associations and the anti-tobacco industry. They're very powerful too, anti-smoking sector. You know all of that. But you need to also be more active. All of us, we have to balance. All of us have to fight for our interests, colleagues. The two tobacco organizations. You know what? Actually, what happens is governments all over the world, as you well know, I don't want to sound like a lecture, they manage competing interests, right? And those who really organize, those who mobilize, those who put pressure, generally get more than those who don't. So please use your own reserves and resources. You are doing legal activities. Your adversaries are illegal. And you have to engage. Also to put pressure on the police and so on. When you give substantial evidence, are they actually acting on these things? Okay. And bring that sort of information to the two committees in Parliament. And then we will refer it to the police committee, as you must do, portfolio committee. There's a very experienced chair there, former minister, Tina Jomart Patterson, and so on. So there you are. And we have another committee chaired on our side by, I think, Shada Sheikh, I'm not sure. I think that's where police falls under justice and home affairs and police, right? And she's got an active chair as well. So there are two whips on both sides, the pull on that side, and we also got a whip on our side. So put pressure on all of us. This is your democracy. Make it work. Let's make this parliament work. Shake us up. We're not doing as much as we should be doing. I think we in the majority party are clear about that too. So you need to put pressure on us, colleagues from civil society. Having said that, colleagues, can we now? Thanks, Mr. Kembe and Mr. NCBC. We are basically now focusing on in-house matters. We don't want to hold you up. I'm sure you have better things to do than listen to our boring in-house matters. We're going to deal with that for 5 minutes, and then the meeting will hopefully draw to a close. Now, having said that, thank you, gentlemen. Firstly, colleagues, we have set a program where we said that we will meet tomorrow, discuss the policy issues, and then hear more from Treasury. And then look at the bill clause by clause, and then meet again on Friday to vote on the bill. So I would like to suggest we can possibly, because we've got 3 full hours tomorrow, do both of that. We can process matters in about an hour, hour and a half, break for half an hour if that's what you want, and then come back and vote on a report. Or we can have it on 2 separate days. The reason why I'm slightly cautious about 2 separate days is between Nkululeko and I, we looked at the possibilities of when we can vote on this bill because we have no choice. The bill has to go to the House next week. So we opted for 9 to 10, but you know, there are some provincial caucuses that sometimes occur from 8:30 to 10 in some parties. And we don't want to lose anybody and we need a quorum. So either we do it between 9 and 10, or we do it after the House arises. I know that's not very popular when the House sits for long because people get exhausted because they've been in meetings all day, Zoom though it may be. Some are physically there. Well, some of these meetings. So all I'm saying is, can we consider finishing the bill tomorrow unless something substantial emerges in the processing of a clause by clause or something dramatically new emerges, because the policy issues have surfaced already. And this is the rates and monetary side. And really, you know, what are the room, what is the room available to deal with all these complex matters by even another week? It's a long sort of process to find some medium path between all these needs and interests. So we'll members think about that and decide. Dennis, yes, what have you to say, my friend?
Yeah, Jay, no, like,
now, don't ruin your very good inputs all day, okay? Don't ruin, because all I remember is the bad things, the good things. So be careful what you say.
I'd like to support the proposal. If we can sit tomorrow, then maybe just have a very short break and then reconvene. I think that would work extremely well for us. Thank you, Jay.
All right, to assist on the broader issues, we don't have a plus. Do members want to suggest to Esther and her team what they should include? We've mentioned Simon Malitsani's point. They must give an account on that. We have mentioned the process of consultation to be chosen carefully, the words Esther, and to refer to Frank so that he checks, you know, that everything is legally sound. Although Esther knows the laws very well too, obviously, but it's just a backup. And we might want to say other things. Are there other recommendations that we want to make in absence of recommendation will emerge tomorrow when we look at it clause by clause, or maybe some party or the other here wants to review its policies on the issue. So can we have, and obviously Esther will summarize the key arguments of the three submissions. She might have even worked on that already. So Esther, can you do a draft report anyway? And you know, send it out when you can, preferably before our meeting tomorrow morning. Because then what happens is all you have to do in that half an hour break is slide in whatever new has emerged and whatever new things the members have said which haven't emerged today. So Esther, please, can you do that? Are you here, Esther? I'm sure you are, but I haven't seen you. Yeah, Esther is very much here. Okay, so is that okay, colleagues? That's the route we take, and if we have to meet on Thursday, so be it. But now it's 9 to 10, otherwise it's going to be after the house rises. If things pan out the way you anticipate, we anticipate will happen, we don't have to meet on the next day. I mean, we can feel good about it. We can feel goodism, you know, meet separately as if there's something dramatic. Ultimately, if something goes to court, the court's not going to, well, I can't speak for the court. They're not going to say, okay, you know, they did meet the next day, therefore the process is fine. Now, obviously, we're also going to say how unacceptable the process is. So we're raising the issue of the elections, unfortunately, the minister, unfortunately, etc. So on the minister, we should say we regret that the minister took an extra week. As we do that, it hasn't appeared before the committee. We have to say that. Though we understand the health issues. Secondly, we should say that there's a more structure. I don't know the word, Esther, speak to Frank and between us. It's a structural issue, Esther. Find the right word, Esther. Or systemic issue. That we are getting these tax bills is important. Never mind the 75, find the balance. We've said it before. Yes, we can't do fundamental changes. No, that doesn't mean we shouldn't give considered attention. And no, we can't do it under these limited circumstances. And no, this particular year, it's been worse because look now, we're finishing next week and let's put on ours for Tuesday next. Now, raise all of those issues, Esther, please. Because really we fed up. Then we reiterate our point of view that the House Chair for Committees, the Chief Whip, and the NCOP Chairperson should approach the powers that could their counterparts in the NA to deal with this matter about these tax bills in particular, but bills in general coming late, as indeed is the concern of most committees in our NCOP, as indeed they've raised in several discussion forums, okay, and in Lakhotlas and so on. Okay, Esther, so that's that. Anything else people want to say for now? They'll get a draft report, hopefully before tomorrow morning meeting, and then they can look at it as well. So then when we break, that's the route we go. Only half an hour is necessary. Okay. Simon, what do you say? Dennis? Okay, Simon? Fani?
Chairperson? Moletani?
Yeah, I saw the chair.
Yeah. Mm. Yes, go I'm for covered. It, Simon.
Yeah, I'm covered. I'm fine with
Money. I'm covered. Thank you, Jim.
Right. No doubt all of you will be reservists tomorrow. Backbenchers on the sidelines of the football match. But that's your democratic right, okay? Fine. Anything else, Tikaleri? You've been very quiet, but, you know, as Francis, better say nothing at times rather than speak. And I think he was directing his attention to me personally. There was a message for me, but he didn't want to say it. But fine, Franz, I got the insult. No problem. See you guys tomorrow. Thank you. Bye then. Younger and your team also, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Thank you.